Excellent, okay. Cool. Right. Okay, well, welcome everyone to the third day of the Gem Days Festival. This evening, there you go. 1.5 minutes.
You're just late enough so that I didn't have to work for you.
As you know, the past few nights we've had a kind of opening act and then a kind of main act. Tonight is kind of different in so much that when PA and I were trying to sort out who we would like to come and present on the kind of live electronic circuit vending side, we couldn't quite decide, so we decided that both of our recommendations would come and share a kind of split concert. I think the interesting thing about both Rodrigo and Phil is that they've come from very different angles from their backgrounds to actually work towards kind of live electronic circuit vending. So for those of you who don't know, can I literally, first question, Rodrigo, is, again, can you just explain a little bit how you came from really quite a kind of classical background towards live electronics and circuit vending? Give us a little bit about that journey.
Well, I'd been interested in sort of unusual sounds for a while, and I was just in the bookstore one day and I came across a book called Gravichords, Pyrophones, and Whirlies. It was put out by this company, Experimental Musical Instruments. And they covered all sorts of stuff, but I was flipping through it, and one of the chapters was on circuit bending. And this was, I think, in 97 or 98 or so, so I was completely blown away. I was so excited. I had this keyboard that I had since when I was a kid. Opened it up, started poking around, and it was the most disappointing thing I had ever gone through in my life. I later learned that some things aren't good for bending, but at the time I didn't know that, so I tried everything and poked, and just I decided the circuit bending isn't for me and it's no good. And then just put that away, it was destroyed. And then, you know, 6 months later, so I got something else and poked around and it was good. And from there started sort of circuit bending. And after about 3 or 4 years of passive circuit bending, I started getting into things that seemed a little more complicated and more into sort of hacking sort of territory and sort of being less turned on by circuit bending. And then that sort of led me to modifying and hacking and graduating into hacking, I guess, from bending, as it were.
Yeah. And Phil, you came from quite a different background.
Yeah, different background. It sounds like the kind of later parts of our journeys have been quite similar. I studied music at university in Norwich. I've been doing some kind of live electronic kind of stuff using the Super Collider at that time, version 1 of Super Collider, and getting into the kind of live electronic side of things. And then we had a concert at the university, at UEA, by a guy called Nicholas Collins, who works at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. He's one of the, I guess, the kind of godfathers of hardware hacking, coming through the kind of American traditions of kind of Cage, Tudor, Lussier, these kind of people. And he did this a concert there. And one of the pieces he did was for a CD player that he modified to make it kind of skip on demand. And it was it made a big impression on me. So much so that I stole his idea and I'm going to do a version of that later on tonight if it's still around. And after I saw this concert, I hadn't heard of circuit bending or anything like this. It was the first time that I'd seen it. I didn't even know there was a term for this kind of thing. So I found out what I could at the time, went down to the kind of second-hand shops, found the cheapest little CD Walkman I could find, opened it up, and then it was, I remember it actually quite clearly, it was an Easter weekend, and I spent the whole of the Easter weekend in the studio at UEA with this CD Walkman opened up, it trying in vain to recreate this skipping on demand. And by the, it was kind of on the third day it rose again, and on the Sunday I'd got it, was triumphant. I got it to work, as well as finding finding other semi-interesting things that happened with it. And then from then on, found out more about what other people were doing with this, tried other devices, broke some, and then recently, I guess, got more into trying to make things from scratch, or more from scratch than I was before.
Now, I was going to ask you about it, because when we look at the kind of early circuit bending diagrams, we were thinking to kind of speak and spell, all kinds of pre-existing things with huge amounts of electronics and buttons added and things like that. But both of you seem to have gone way beyond that and actually started making a whole variety of really quite different instruments. I remember when I came down to UEA once seeing your kind of accordion with kind of USB plug and kind of circuit board on it. I mean, can you tell us a little bit about why you moved to making your own instruments?
Why? I think, as Rodrigo was saying earlier, it kind of, the novelty of circuit bending, when it is novel, is really exciting, but it does wear off, and there's only so many times that you can hear the same kind of sounds come out of stuff. And also, I mean, one of the great things about circuit bending is you don't have to have any knowledge of electronics at all. You can just open something up and prod around, and things either will or won't happen. It's depending on how fate feels at the time. But as you kind of, well, I think what typically happens is as you work through this process of exploring, you almost kind of by osmosis, you kind of get to learn about electronics, and even if you don't intentionally try, and the more you do learn, the more you can do to the instruments, and then I think it's just kind of gradual evolution and progression, isn't it, about these things. Mm-hmm. We were talking just before the session that we've just both recently got into actually starting to get into programming microcontrollers and things like that. It's a slippery slope.
Mm. Well, Rodrigo, but your instruments seem to encompass the kind of virtual in Max through to acoustic instruments that you've kind of adapted in various ways, right through to electronic instruments. I mean, can you tell us a little bit about some of the setups you have tonight?
Yeah, and for me, a big part of sort of the instruments that I've modified or built or sort of use is I, at heart, even when I'm using electronic instruments, I feel like an instrumentalist. I like to have the reins, and, you know, whether with circumbending, like, or this kind of stuff, whether you let go of them, but to still be able to control whether or not I'm controlling it is a big part of it for me. So a lot of the instruments that I sort of worked with or built was to be able to expand on that. So instead of sitting at a piano and playing some things, I could sit at a, you know, 7 aluminum bars and still actuate and still perform, but have the sounds be different. So a lot of the setup that I have here today is built around, obviously, a drum set, but although it looks, well, it doesn't really look all that regular, but just, you know, the floor tom has got little contact mics that I can play by touching it. And that came from, there's an instrument sitting back there. About half the electronic instruments on the stage are this Baltimore instrument designer who has these, they're almost designed circuit bent. Like, that's one of the things that started turning the page for me, as he was saying, with circuit bending. I got really tired of the sound of a speak and spell or the sound of, you know, something distorting. Like, after a while, you know, I've heard enough of it, so started looking at other places, and I found this guy, and it was these things designed from the ground up to be chaotic. And a lot of, like, in building some of the kits, a lot of the capacitors you're meant to put in randomly. So each instrument's kind of different in its own right. So I started getting really into those, but one of them in the back has these aluminum bars that you play by pressing on them. They've got little contact mics underneath, and it produces a pitch. So I said, well, this is great, but how can I do this while I'm doing something else? Because I've performed with it often sitting in front of me, and it's great and wonderful, but I could maybe do that on my drum set. So I took apart my drum and put little contact mics, and I went through about 3 or 4 different versions before I got it sort of working kind of right. And then I really enjoyed it because I could be sitting there doing other things and then reach over and just at something next to me, just touch it and be able to play that instrument without having to reach around or do anything else. And a lot of the other things are like that. I've got this thing over there hooked up to these sort of whisk-looking things. And that one's not disappointing, but I'd like to improve on it further. But it's these whisks I built from scratch that it have sort of, I think it's 7 or 6 different, you know, tongs or tines or whatever they're called on a whisk that are all isolated from each other. So it's sort of 7 or 6 switches that you have in your hand, and they terminate in this little weird instrument. So depending on what I press or strike a drum with, those things hit together and momentarily make a connection, or 2 connections or 3 connections. So I could use those sound sources, but in a instrumental sort of way. And then other things ranging, like there's another one back there that's, it's electroacoustic in the sense, I mean, it's got guitar pickups in it, but it's, I also play guitar, but I wanted to be able to access those sounds from, again, the drum set, because it's comfortable to sit down and make music. So it's sort of 3 levels of guitar with guitar pickups, and I can play them and hit them and do things like that. So sort of trying to build this setup into an all-in-one kind of thing, because I can play drums, I can play some piano, so I've got some little melodica thing around, and I can play some guitar. So trying to get the sounds that I like all next to where I'm sitting. So that's kind of how this sort of setup and approach, I guess, developed.
Yeah. And Phil, can I ask yours? Because, I mean, yours is rather different. And of course, we have the obligatory potted plant.
Oh, yes, yes.
It's not maybe
no
the decoration,
concert is complete without the potted plant. No, and this is where we do have quite a different approach to doing things. I need quite specific things to do. So I try and make... I'm not really a natural performer, I don't think. I'm not very confident on stage doing these kind of things. So part of the reason that this kind of stuff appeals to me is that there's other interesting stuff for people to look at that takes the attention away from me. And so with what I'm going to do tonight, I think I'm doing 5 pretty, if not structured pieces, then quite organised pieces. So each piece has a distinct number of elements to it. The plants, to start with the most interesting, then the plants are connected up just with crocodile clips to an instrument which was made in the 80s sometime. It's called an omnicord, if anybody's heard of that. And it's like a what's the acoustic version?
Auto harp.
So it's kind of an electric version of an auto harp, where you kind of strum it and it plays chords. And its gimmick is that it has a little metal bar that you strum with your finger. So a kind of predecessor of the iPhone, almost, with its touch sensitiveness. And it's actually a really quite a boring instrument. It drones and it goes boing, and that's kind of it. So with this piece, the plants, crocodile clipped to the plants, and the crocodile clips go to various points on the circuit board of this device. And the piece, I play it by putting my hands on the circuit board to conduct, using my fingers to conduct between points on the circuit board. But also the plants are in this loop as well, so they contribute to what happens. And if I touch the circuit board and touch the plants, then that changes the sound as well. Again, it's something to take the attention away from me, and people can wonder about what's going on with the plants instead. But now you know what's going on. So that's the curtain drawn aside. Yes, and so the other pieces will be not necessarily along similar lines, but with the same kind of thing. One or two things that I know I need to do so that they have their own character. The pieces.
One of the things that we often associate with some of the early circuit bending stuff. And again, what Bennett Hogg was talking about with his resistant violin yesterday was that there's a certain amount of unpredictability to his instrument, that he's working live and he is engaging with that, but he's also engaging with the sound on an extremely moment-to-moment basis, not knowing what the computer or what this violin is going to do. When you're designing your instruments, I mean, how much is it that you're designing your instruments to do something that you know you're going to be able to work with, and how much unpredictability is built into them to maintain that sense of spontaneity?
I guess for me, it's similar as a performer with this sort of instruments is as a composer, that I like to build in that kind of surprise. For me, surprise is very important. Like, if I knew everything that I was going to do and everything that was going to happen, I probably wouldn't do it. So in the moment, based on all the other variables, there's elements that sort of influence what you're doing. And with these instruments, at least a lot of the sources that they start with, they tend to be kind of chaotic, but a systematic chaos. So it's a type of system that's happening. And even though it's random in what it's doing, my choice to use that system, I understand what sort of the limits of that system are and what kind of sounds will emanate. Like I can understand whether or not to use that system. So if I'm sitting back there, I know if I go over here, what sort of chaos I'm going to get. If I go over here, I know what kind of chaos I'm going to get. I'm not just sitting back there and, you know, dodging these air and sounds running at me. So it's, I guess, in coming up with the instrument and the interface, the type of chaos, and then I guess developing the interface for it, and how I will then control or not control whatever it is that it's doing. So I guess it's an instrumental choice again, you know, whether I will do it now or I will not do it now, or I will change what I'm doing based on what it's doing now. So it comes down to sort of interface and then desire to use, I guess.
Yeah, I think I would pretty much agree with all of that. It is a kind of fine balance, isn't it? You want to know, you want to know within certain kind of bounds or parameters what kind of stuff is going to come out of this thing, but you don't want to know generally the details of it. You want it to have its own life and its own kind of voice, but for you to be able to not be completely surprised. Maybe you do want to be completely surprised, but only if it does something really good.
Phil, when you're working, you say you're going to be presenting five quite distinct pieces. Obviously, when some people are working with this type of field, they kind of try something from a technical perspective and then think about what they can realise for that. How much is it that the concept of what you want to do drives what you're actually wanting to make?
As opposed to the technology driving things? That is a good question. It is, I guess, with any type of electronic music, electronic art, there is a danger that the technology will lead, isn't there? I think it's maybe something that takes time to sort out. Maybe there'll be something that you or that I find technically interesting or technologically interesting first of all, but then it takes a bit of time and kind of distance as well from that to try and work out a way of making it musically interesting or formatively interesting or visually interesting, rather than just thinking, oh, this works by some cool kind of effect, so people will find it interesting, because it's generally not the case of that. Difficult question, but again, hopefully you find some kind of balance between it being technically interesting, sonically interesting, and ideally visually interesting as well.
And again, how do you kind of compare your virtual kind of Max instruments with your acoustic ones? Are they again driven by performability, or are they driven by a concept of, you know, around my drums I can perform this? This is an extra feature that would be great.
For me, when I started with Max, I tried really, really, really hard not to get caught up in all that. Look at this! It's amazing. What does it do? you know, like that element of it. So I was very wary of that. So I tried to build things like one of the biggest patches I built was a sort of a no input mixer, virtual no input mixer, knowing that I'd used that before and enjoying those type of sounds, trying to recreate that in software so I wouldn't have to take a mixer around. So that sort of the concept then drove the software in that sense. But with a lot of things, there is a danger. And I think that's part of why I sort of shied away from a bit of the circuit bending as well, because I've got my speaking flow, it goes, burp, 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 and that's great, and here I am with it, and then that's it. So it's as he's mentioned, it's a balance. You have to sort of keep that distance and sort of keep the perspective of the actual end result as opposed to the techie sort of side of it. For me, I feel lucky and glad, or I guess anybody who does this kind of thing, that I enjoy both parts. Like, I'll sit there and I'll look up all night on the internet, you know, stupid little bits of this and bits of that, and you know, drill and have fun doing all this, and then, period, perform and try to make music with those tools. So it's not like, if I found that kind of stuff boring, it would probably be different. I probably wouldn't use this kind of stuff. I would, use just a guitar and an amp or something and then make music with that. So it's, you know, it's fun to be able to approach both, but to keep that perspective as far as trying to actually then do something with it.
Yeah. Can I go off on a slightly different tangent? Because we talked about the technical side quite a bit. I mean, Rodrigo, as well as being a performer, mm-hmm. I mean, you have your own label. You run a regular improv night. You're, I mean, member of at least two or three other groups with fantastic names, like Tasha Hashi's Shellfish Concern and the Van Gogh Project. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you tell us a little bit more about your other activities apart from being a performer?
Yeah, for me, I love music. I've been doing music since I was a kid, and hopefully we'll do music till I die. So trying to be involved in as many different things it was kind of an epiphany. Like, before moving to the UK, I tried to pick a project that I could put everything into and then work that one project. And there was always failings. There was, you know, limits to what other people like and where I liked and vice versa. But I still wanted that approach. I wanted the 100% approach. And then moving here, I decided, well, it's too much. Like, I like too many different things. So I need to explore these things separately. So I got involved in one of the groups, Takahashi Shellfish Concern. It's an improv-based thing, and it's very similar to this, but it deals with my wife, who's a painter or artist, working visuals and improvisation at the same time as the music and the interaction between that. So I find that enjoyable. So I tried to create a project in which I can explore that. And then I love playing drums, and I love sort of complicated music. So I've got Defta Van Gogh's Ear, which is sort of a poppy, mathy, you know, hard-to-learn sort of project, and then doing solo stuff, just trying to find the things I'm interested in and then fill up my schedule with no free time so I could do them all, just to maintain that level of busyness, which I found, although exhausting, is fun for me, just exploring all those elements.
Well, Phil, you often have performed in a whole variety of very, very different groups, haven't you?
I played in a kind of, I guess, kind of punk poppy band with a couple of Japanese people, which was good fun, very different to this. I can kind of play guitar as far as proper instruments go. So I played guitar in that. It's very noisy, very fast. I'm getting a bit old for that now, slowing down. And so I've teamed up with a couple of people who are also getting too old for that kind of stuff, and we've formed kind of a prog rock band, a little bit tongue in cheek, as most prog rock tends to be, and that serves as a kind of outlet for things which, I don't know, things which I probably wouldn't do in a setup like this. Some of them would. So instruments made out of lasers and crystals and things like this. More drone-y, a bit improvised still. And yeah, I guess things kind of bleed together and influence. Lots of different musics influence each other from things that you do, or things that you do. And I've also, I guess, probably a lot to do with working at an art school. I've started to do kind of art, visual art kind of projects as well, still using, kind of based around technology, really is common ground between that and the music side of things. But it was quite a I don't know what the word is, maybe a bit of a kind of shock, realising that I'd made something that didn't have any sound in it at all. But it was, going quite well.
Thank you. Can I open it up to everybody else? Does anybody else have any questions they'd like to ask either Rodrigo or Phil, either about their work or what they might hear tonight or anything?
Yeah, right. Rodrigo, once you introduce you're saying you come from a kind of classical background, mm-hmm. in some respect. There are clear links in both your works to experimental traditions, which you signify things like Tudor, Cage, things like Lucia. And yet, there seems to be a bit of a break there, in that if one wants to make kind of crass divisions between the experimental tradition being kind of process-led, if you like, rather than outcome-led, both of you make reference to the, you know, the import of the product, if you like, the end product, so less the improvised aspect of something, but fine-tuning things, perhaps. Do you think that's something which comes along with this development of new instruments yourselves, you know, building instruments yourselves, and how might that kind of aesthetic basis, if you like, for thinking about what you do relate back to kind of traditional circuit bending?
I think.
Did you get that? Didn't
I? Yeah, I think so. I think there's a kind of a blurry line a lot of the time, for if I'm speaking personally, for the things that I make, as to whether it's an instrument or whether it's a piece, if you like. Mm. So, kind of instrument building. And composing a kind of together, you're composing and building an instrument at the same time, and building this system or this environment for things to happen, which you then kind of play. The way I think of the this kind of American tradition of electronic music coming through Tudor and Lucia and people. It's very much very kind of simple, very elegant. It's kind of one idea which is just followed through. I think correct me if you don't agree with this, but that seems to be quite an American thing, especially in this kind of tradition, just to be able to kind of simplify or to concentrate on one idea and follow it through. And as a Brit or in Europe, it seems to be much less of a tradition of that. There's a lot more kind of weight of history, if you like, a lot more baggage to do with music, with kind of just years of history, and so it doesn't come as naturally, maybe, to just focus on these things. So they do tend to spread out a bit more and get a bit messier. Did that relate to any
of
it? I mean, for me, coming from just a classical background, one of the biggest impacts that I had on I guess my development is the discipline and the rigor, I guess, of just taking it very seriously, which I find to be the most lacking with sort of experimental music, is people making it because they can't make anything else. Mm-hmm. As like, oh, well, you don't understand it because it's, you just don't understand it, not because it's not good. So that kind of doing that, but I guess a big part for me was in sort of a breaking with tradition is learning about them and sort of taking that in, but trusting my aesthetics and sensibility. And I sort of had, again, another epiphany. I was watching a documentary on spoken word, and it was Charles Bukowski, and he was talking about how one of the most important things and how good art is like a hot beer shit. And it was the most profound, well, not the most profound, but I found that to be really impactful in the way that I thought, in that it just is. It doesn't have to be pretty, it doesn't have to be anything, it just is what it is. And that really sort of, it gave me carte blanche to, well, if that's the case, then, you know, then really trusting a lot of the interests that I had, just, you know, because I did a lot of circumventing for a long time, but it wasn't really connected to anything that I was actually doing, just because I guess it felt hobbyish or something. And then at some point just realizing that, well, I like this, I'll just do it. And I feel, and much with the American tradition, that particularly moving here and not being born in America, I was born in Spain, but spent all, well, nearly all of my life there, is that I feel very acultural in a sense of but I don't know if that's really an American thing or just a personal thing, that I don't really feel any reverence towards, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, I do learn them and I try to take it in and do all that, but it becomes a point where it's then me. It's me in the driver's seat, and it's me wanting to do what I want to do, and then trusting my interest, even though if it's not really related or obscure or something, just going with that and having the confidence to sort of do that.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, what led a lot of those old school American guys to do what they did. Yeah. Just sort of revolutionary kind of individuals.
Mm. I guess, and also to not worry if it goes wrong.
Just to for me, and that's a big part of just improvisation in general, is that danger. If I know it's going to sound good, then I'm not taking a big enough risk.
Yeah.
You know, so I have to play at that threshold where it could very well just go bad, or it could be amazing. That's the exciting point. You know, if I stay in Safeville, mm-hmm. it's not satisfying.
This is one. Oh, sorry, can I?
Yes.
because one of the aspects of the kind of what might be seen as traditional hardware hacking, you know, intervening in consumer goods, seems to have a very specific political bent to it, or can be seen in dystopian manners. And yet, in both of your work now, you're suggesting with building instruments, you're moving away from those kinds of aspects towards, almost it seems, towards more to kind of embedding these things in other traditions, you know. Perhaps a move towards, as you suggested, you know, you see it between European and American traditions, whether there is a kind of encroaching of more kind of traditional compositional aspects on
perform. I think the kind of political or ideological appearance of these things, I think a lot of the time is just an appearance. It's can be really quite superficial, especially when you kind of, you know, you look on eBay and there's circuit bent keyboard listings selling for hundreds of pounds or these kind of things. It's conceptually, I think it is it does fit that way, that you're taking these mass produced consumer objects and kind of intervening in them, personalising them. So yeah, at a kind of certain level, that is the case. But I think on a wider scale, it's more complicated than it seems. But yes, I think you're quite right. It's that moving on from there and building stuff and putting it in different contexts makes a difference.
I mean, looking at the stage tonight, I kind of almost have a feeling that some of Rodriguez, it's almost like kind of Harry Parch in the digital age. Because there's a real beauty about those instruments. And then I think the interesting for me is that they're instruments and they're not just interfaces. I think there's a real difference between, taking an interface and then plugging it into something else, which is, I don't know, controlling Macs or something else, and then actually building an instrument that has a kind of, almost like you are building up a performance tradition with it, as Parch did. So I think it has crossed over into a rather different field of experimental music than just the kind of New York school that we associate with Cage and Tudor and people like that, perhaps.
I mean, it's interesting as well, I think, that you've got these plants that you're using rather than presenting yourself as a performer. You become an instrument, the body becomes an instrument in a sense as well, that you're making your part of the, you become part of the circuitry in that sense. So. Yes, that's another dimension to that, to that aspect, personalising or deep heterogenising, I guess, the setup.
Yeah, I've always liked having a heterogeneous array of things to mess around with and to try and connect in some way. I think connecting things together is a big big turn on, if you like, as far as I'm concerned. Trying to get to disparate things and connect them, ideally without some kind of interface there, just to get them together. I think you can that's the case on both sides of the stage, I guess, as well.
Anybody else have any other questions?
What's next? How far do you think you can take it before it, do you think it's going to become another circuit bending? Can it become almost, as you said, sort of boring, or can you take it further? Do you have any more plans for
I don't know, do you know?
I think for me is again just trusting my water stick or whatever, as it were, just going in the direction that I find interesting will lead me on to, like, as you mentioned before, we're both trying to get into microcontrollers now and sort of learning a new tool or a new approach, and then next it might be something else. It's aesthetically driven, it's interest driven. So I'll chase what seems interesting, what sounds interesting, what looks interesting, and let that sort of guide it, as opposed to, I'm then going to circuit bend something even bigger, and I'll have more knobs and more switches. Like, instead of chasing that technology, I'll chase the interest, which will then maybe lead to new technology, or maybe it'll go in a different direction. Maybe I'll, start playing bongos, or something. But it'll be up to sort of me and my interest,
It is a difficult. These difficult points in whatever things you do, doesn't it? What do you do when something becomes boring? Do you kind of try and push through it and keep going, or do you go off somewhere else? And I think it is just kind of almost on a whim, isn't it? You feel which way you want to go and do it.
Okay.
I don't know what seems to take us around.
Good.
I think on a women going through, I think it's probably a good place to stop.
Sounds good.
So, Phil, Rodrigo, we're looking forward to hearing what promises to be a really exciting gig tonight. And thank you very much.